I want to move on with you now to the second part of this book of Sirach, chapter 4:11 to 6:17. 4:11 to 16 reads, "Wisdom lifts up her children and embraces those who seek her. Whoever loves her loves life, and those who seek her from early morning are filled with joy. Whoever holds her fast inherits glory. The Lord blesses the place she enters. Those who serve her worship her with the worship due only to God. Those who serve her minister to the Holy One." The Greek word for minister here is leiturgein, from which we get our English word liturgy. Those who serve her minister to the Holy One. The Lord loves those who love her. Wisdom being personified here as a woman. Those who obey her will judge the nations, and all who listen to her will live secure. If they remain faithful, they will inherit her. Their descendants will also obtain her. And the text goes on in verse 17 to 18. "For at first she will walk with them on tortuous paths. She will bring fear and dread upon them and will torment them by her discipline until she trusts them. She'll test them with her ordinances. Then she will come straight back to them again and gladden them, and will reveal her secrets to them." The Greek word for reveal is apokalypto, from which we get our word apocalypse, the revelation of the secret. So wisdom will test us, but when we're proved worthy of the test, she will embrace us and bring us joy and gladness and reveal the mysteries of God to us. Chapter 4, verse 28, I have to select, obviously, reads, "Fight to the death for truth, and Yahweh will fight for you." Perhaps struggle might be better. Agonizomai, from which agona comes, agony, is a struggle, a striving. Well, strive to the death for truth. A beautiful word. The Greek is aletheia. Lethe in the Greek mythology is the river of forgetfulness. At the beginning is a negative. And aletheia is not forgetting. It's when what really is obvious, manifest, and not hidden behind, obscured behind some mask. Well, struggle to death for the truth. Jesus says in John chapter 8, verse 32, "The truth will set you free." Yahweh will fight for you. Verse 5, chapter 5, verse 2-7, reads, this is the only part of chapter 5 I'll share with you, "Do not count on your mind and strength in pursuing the desires of your heart. Don't say, 'Who can prevail against me?' For the Lord will surely punish you. Do not say, 'I sinned, yet what has happened to me?' The Lord is slow to anger. Don't be so confident of forgiveness that you add sin to sin. Don't say, 'Oh, his mercy is great. He'll forgive the multitude of my sins.' For both mercy and wrath are with him, and his anger will rest on sinners." In other words, it matters what we do. Yes, God is love, but love has to be welcomed. And if we're rejecting it, we're not receiving it. And it's not having its life-giving, graced effects in us. We're dying. Mercy is the word we use to speak of God's faithful love for us sinners. Wrath is the word we use to speak of the effects of our failure to welcome his love. Do not delay to turn back to the Lord. Do not postpone it from day to day, says Ben Sira. For suddenly the wrath of the Lord will come upon you, and at a time of punishment you will perish. And now, completing the second part, just reading this few verses from chapter 6, verse 14 to 17, reads, "Faithful friends are a sturdy shelter. Whoever finds one has found a treasure. Faithful friends are beyond price. No sum can balance their worth. Faithful friends are life-saving medicine. Those who fear the Lord will find them. Those who fear the Lord direct their friendship aright. For as they are, so are their neighbours also." A comment. Real friendship is possible only to a person who has a profound sense of the sacred, who is obedient to the Torah. How can we truly love someone if we don't see them as made in the image of God, who is the source of their life and who sustains them in love? If we do not see that, we do not see the person as he or she really is. Our relationship is not built on the sure foundation of truth. We move now to a third section in this book of Ben Sira, the teaching of Ben Sira. It goes from chapter 6, verse 18, to chapter 14, verse 19. And I'll just select some passages from it. Chapter 6, verse 24 to 25, firstly reads, "Put your feet into her fetters, and your neck into her collar. Bend your shoulders and carry her. Do not fret under her bonds." Ben Sira is returning to the image of a plough. It's not easy to bear the yoke of the Torah, but from the hard work of ploughing comes the joy of the harvest. Ben Sira agrees with the author of the third lamentation. It's good to bear the yoke from one's youth. Jesus offers a yoke that is better than the Torah. Matthew 11:28 reads, "Come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me. For I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your soul." To repeat Sirach's words, "Put your feet into her fetters, your neck into her collar, wisdom's collar. Bend your shoulders, carry her, do not fret under her bonds." Chapter 6, verse 26 to 31 reads, "Draw close to her with all your soul. Keep her ways with all your might. Search her out, discover her, seek her, and you will find her. When you get hold of her, do not let her go." Then at last you will find the rest she gives. She'll be changed into joy for you. Then her fetters will become for you a strong defense, her collar a glorious robe. Her yoke will be your golden ornament, her bonds your purple cord. You'll wear her like a glorious robe. You will put her on, put wisdom on, like a splendid crown. And verse 37 of chapter 6 reads, "Reflect on the statutes of the Lord. Meditate at all times on his commands." That's the theme of the very first psalm in the psalmody. Meditate at all times on the commands of the Lord. It is he who will give insight to your mind, and your desire for wisdom he will grant. Chapter 7, verse 1. Do no evil. Do not let evil overtake you. We're reminded of Paul's words at the end of chapter 12 of his letter to the Romans, where he says, "Do not be overcome by evil. Overcome evil with good." Yes, overcome evil, sure, but not with evil, with good. Verse 6, "Do not seek to become a judge. If you are not determined to root out crime, or if you'll be pressured into being partial to the powerful and so mar your integrity, don't seek to become a judge if this is what you're going to do with your power. Only become a judge if you're determined to root out crime and can resist the pressure of being partial to the powerful." Verse 10, "Do not grow weary when you pray, and do not neglect to give alms." Let's jump to chapter 10 now, and two small passages from that I'll share with you for your reflection. Verses 4 to 5, "The government of the earth is in the hand of God. Over it he will raise up the right leader for the time. Overall sovereignty is in the hand of God, who imparts his majesty to the ruler." Daniel, written a little bit after this time, the book of Daniel, chapter 2, verse 21, reads, "God changes times and seasons, deposes kings and sets up kings, gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding." Both these passages, perhaps a simplistic view of God, everything that happens is somehow willed by God, determined ultimately by God. It doesn't seem to us to leave enough room for real freedom in human decisions and the sin in the world that can raise up a king, for example, rather than God's providential will. Verse 12 reads, "The beginning of human pride is to forsake the Lord. The heart has withdrawn from its maker." And now two small passages, verses from chapter 11 for reflection. Verse 14 reads, "Good things and bad, life and death, poverty and wealth come from Yahweh." Good things and bad, life and death, poverty and wealth come from Yahweh. And verse 28 reads, "Call no one happy before his death. By how he ends, a person is known." Verse Chapter 12, verses 1 to 7, is the first, we might say, blatant example of a view of life that Jesus had to contradict. I'll read to you from chapter 12, verse 1 to 7, and then remind you of Jesus' words, Jesus' parable, which we find in Luke, the parable of the Good Samaritan, Luke chapter 10, verse 29 to 37. Sirach chapter 12, verse 1 to 7 reads, and if you listen carefully, you'll see something that will cause you to jolt. If you do good, know to whom you're doing it, and your good deeds will achieve their desired effect. Do good to the just, and you'll be repaid, if not by them, certainly by Yahweh. No good comes to one who gives to the person who persists in evil, nor is doing so an act of mercy. Give to the devout person, but do not help the sinner. Do good to the lowly, but do not give to the ungodly. Hold back their bread, don't give it to them. For by means of it they might overpower you, and then you'll receive twice as much evil for all the good you've done to them. And why does he advise this? He explains in verse 7, God himself hates sinners and will inflict punishment on the ungodly. Give to the devout person, but do not help the sinner. That would have been the understanding of the lawyer who said to Jesus, who is my neighbour? And he would have thought his neighbour was a Jewish man, a devout, righteous Jew. Jesus' story of the prodigal son, of the Good Samaritan, is no, your neighbour is anyone who's nearby, whoever, a human being is enough for you to love. And you know also in Matthew 5:43 in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has this extraordinary, love your enemies, do good to those who persecute you, etc. It's a whole new freedom of being who we are and not defining ourselves by a religious or national or ethnic group. Chapter 14, a couple of passages from that before we conclude this part. Chapter 14, verse 1 to 2 reads, happy are those who do not blunder with their lips, whose heart brings them no remorse. Happy are those whose inner being does not condemn them, who have not given up their hope. Happy, makarios in Greek, ashrei in Hebrew, is a difficult word to translate. Sometimes it's translated blessed. Blessed are those who do not blunder, as in blessed are the poor in spirit, they have the kingdom of God. Well, the different difficulty there is that the blessed is actually focusing on what God is doing, blessing. The focus of makarios, of this word here, is on what we're doing to receive God's blessing by being faithful to the covenant. So whether happy picks that up, I don't think it does, but it's saying you are blessed, but it's focusing on what we must do to welcome the blessing. Not just the fact that God is the constantly one who's offering blessing, yes, of course, blessed, but we're also experiencing this communion with God in the Spirit, when we open ourselves up to ways of living that welcome grace. If happy captures that for you, then declaring someone happy is rejoicing with them that they're behaving in such a way as to be in a state of communion with God. So I'll read it again. Happy are those who do not blunder with their lips, whose heart brings them no remorse. Happy are those whose inner being does not condemn them and who've not given up their hope. I'll conclude with chapter 14, verse 11 to 19. My son, says the teacher, treat yourself well according to your means. Enjoy it as best you can. Remember that death does not tarry, and the decree of Hades has not been shown to you. Do good to friends before you die. Reach out and give to them as much as you can. Do not deprive yourself of a day's enjoyment. Do not let your share of desired good pass by you. Will you not leave the fruit of your labors to another? And what you acquired by toil to be divided by lot? Give and take. Indulge yourself, because in Hades one cannot look for luxury. All living beings, says Ben Sira, all living beings become old like a garment, for the decree from of old is, you must die. Like abundant leaves on a spreading tree that sheds some and puts forth others, so are the generations of flesh and blood. One dies, another is born. Every work decays and ceases to exist, and the one who made it will pass away with it.